providing poor quality water, because the specification looks at the system. There is another process, which is electronic water quality management system, that looks at the water itself. So here you have the analysis of water that is given to the people that has to be monitored on a continuous basis, but you also want to look at the systems that are used. And I thought, let me make that differentiation so that it is easy to engage in terms of someone getting a blue drop status, but possibly not providing acceptable quality water, or someone not getting a blue drop test but providing an acceptable quality water. And it is so true that we have some challenges in the Eastern Cape and some parts of Limpopo. And quite too often, if an institution does not get a blue drop status, that is an indication that we may have a problem, but it does not necessarily mean that there is a problem. On the relationship that the department has with water boards, it is a parliamentary process. Water boards have to develop business plans and reports and everything. The minister is representing the shareholder, or is the shareholder. Unfortunately, I think the statement and the question by honorable members is so true. Most water boards are facing challenges around sustainability, and that is where this relationship gets strained somewhat, and that is why when the acting DG was making a presentation, she emphasized on the fact that the minister has actually commissioned a task to look at those issues closely, because we want to have answers and to rectify the situation accordingly. And when the water boards cannot sustain their operations, then the relationship gets subjected to all sorts of pressures. However, water boards are our institution, and their business plans have to talk to our strategic plan, and that is the relationship that exists. Butsilo Water Board, because it was mentioned, is not different from many other water boards, but at the same time, we do have very good and well-performing water boards in the country, and we believe that their experiences could be shared among all of them. If I were allowed to mention a few: Rand Water, Umgeni Water, Umhlathuzi Water, Lipele Water, all those water boards are doing quite well. There will be one or two things that could be questioned, but in terms of their sustainability, they are not subjected to any challenges of magnitude. The 10% budget spending on resource poor farmers, it is so true. The reason why we highlighted that is the fact that when we give this money to resource poor farmers, it is transfer money. And if you don't transfer all the money, then it has to be clear that not all the money was transferred. However, the budget was spent. What happened was that while we were busy implementing that project or program, Resource Poor Farmer Support Program, at the same time, there was an initiative by the presidency, which is a poverty strategy implementation. And instead of the department giving this money to the resource poor farmers, we expanded the support that we give, and all that money was given to that anti-poverty strategy implementation program of the presidency, whereby the department literally gave rainwater harvesting tanks to communities. Instead of the money given to a farmer or to develop an irrigation scheme, for instance, the money was given to poor community members who needed water both for drinking as well as for vegetable production. So 90% of the budget was actually redirected to support the anti-poverty strategy implementation in the presidency. The 9 or 10 catchment management agencies and the amount of money involved in supporting those. In terms of the number of catchment management agencies, the department is busy with what we call institutional realignment project. Nothing has been finalized, but the minister has given her clear vision to it. The question was, do we need all 19 catchment management agencies, and how much will the department pay to sustain all 19 of them? And the question is, what would be the number of agencies that will make sense to government and to the people we serve? It could be 9 if we go according to the borders of the country in terms of provinces. It could be 10 if you look at major systems that we have in the country. Depending on what comes out of this IR project or institutional realignment project, the department and possibly the members here will know before a decision is taken as to which way things could be and the justification to that. On the Albany Coast Water Board, the water board needs money. They need 2.47 million rand. The submission is developed. The chief financial officer asked fundamental questions before the management of the department could take a decision for the water board to actually show the cash flow, because it's one thing to support someone, but it is something else to support someone whose activities are not convincing that they are aware of the problem. What we have discovered is that the Albany Coast Water Board is providing water, but their tariff suggests that the Albany Coast Water Board is unable to recover the operating costs. At the moment, every month that water board is losing around 50,000 rand. However, once we have that information in terms of cash flows, I'm sure the management of the department will look at the submission and make recommendations or and take a decision. It is so true that this has been communicated for a few months now, but it is the delay is probably due to the fact that we have not been given the cash flows, which is what will actually indicate to the department that the water board will turn around the corner and improve in terms of their sustainability. There are other ideas as to whether we really need that water board, given its size and the small size of the community that it is providing water to. But that is not part of the request that they've made. Chair, I thought let me start with responding to those questions before I quickly run through my presentation. I will only be taking 10 slides of my presentation.
Thank you. Chairperson, I think at one meeting we requested the department that when they print these documents, they shouldn't print them in small letters. Now, this one of Mukiza is definitely one will struggle to see as to what has been written here. Elected DG, I think you were present that day when we raised this concern. But this continues to be the, like this. Not this one of Mukiza. Almost every page, small letter. So people, the older people like Bomamzi, they can't read this. Also myself, I have to. How do you get this document?
Because it's getting older.
I'm 49 now. This should be the last time we receive this type of document, definitely.
Members, this and also officials, this becomes a daily problem. I mean, yesterday in our committee on environment, water, agriculture, forest fisheries, we were confronted with the same problem. In fact, yesterday was worse because we had, you know, in one page, four slides. Now, to an extent, you see, the issue here is that when you leave as well, perhaps if you do have any pictures or charts, or you should be able to make use of the document itself, away from everybody else, on your own, being able to follow it up, so that you are able to read and understand and follow it up on your own. Maybe let's just do that message for the last time. That because you get this message about coming here way in advance, so that you find time to prepare. Part of that preparation also, not only are you preparing for yourself, but also preparing for those ones who are going to, you are going to interact with. So that it really gets to be a fruitful exercise for everybody else. So that's the essence of the message. Thanks, Khosh Mathew. Thanks.
My apologies, Chair. We will take note of that and do the right thing. My presentation will very much focus on the 2008-2009 performance against the targets that were set, and I will briefly talk to the future performance, things that we plan to do going into the future. And I will also briefly touch on the linkage of what we do to government aim, broader government aim. Next slide. We had wanted to do six feasibility studies during the period, and we managed to do four feasibility studies and two pre-feasibility studies. Here you are talking about studies that say how much water do you need as a country and where is that need. For instance, the second phase of the Lesotho Highlands Water Project was part of those studies that we conducted. And hence, Cabinet took a decision to say we need to embark on that second phase of the Lesotho project. It's among those studies that were conducted. And we also did reconciliation strategies for our four major systems, which is the Vaal River system, the Ethekwini Metro and surrounding areas, the Algoa system in the Eastern Cape, as well as Crocodile West system in the Northwest Limpopo. There's always a question around climate change, whether this department is doing anything on climate change. And we have a discussion paper that we developed. This discussion paper will allow us to further consult with stakeholders and experts, so that this department will have a climate change response strategy. That is what we want to have at the end of this financial year. But we already have a discussion paper that will lead us to that. On the second edition of the Natural Water Resources Strategy, the process has started. This process is very much twinned with the Water for Growth and Development Framework, and hence there was that question whether we finish our activities on Water for Growth and Development Framework or we freeze Water for Growth and Development Framework in order to push the strategy, or we do both simultaneously. But now both processes are underway. We may be delayed in terms of taking the National Water Resources Strategy to Parliament, but the process has already started. On the processing of license applications, that process has been a very slow one, but we took a conscious decision to say, on average, it should not take more than 12 months to actually process an application. You do have those applications that are very complex, which require even consultation with communities that might be affected, and that can take quite a long time. But on average, we say we should take 12 months, and that's what we are realizing, and I'm happy to report that that has happened. The compulsory licensing and the water allocation to everyone has been the focus in the previous year, particularly for those areas in the Umhlatu's catchment and Jan Diesel. It is a slow process. However, the framework for allocation has been developed, and that has allowed us to actually give even more licensing to historically disadvantaged individuals than anticipated, because at least we have that document to rely on in terms of decision-making and getting things done. I've spoken to the 10% budget utilization on resource-poor farmers, and the fact that we spent 10% instead of 100%, it is because the money was redirected, but all the budget was removed. The unlawful storage of water is one of the projects that we wanted to do. And we discontinued that project because there were other pressing needs, and because of capacity again, particularly in our legal section, we had to ask ourselves the question, how critical is this? Of course, we do monitor the dams and structures that have not been approved, and when we come across those structures, we either get someone to assess and in order for us to give the license, or if the structure is actually dangerous to the neighboring communities, we ask the person who puts up that structure to dismantle it. Next slide. The Water Use Efficiency Program is one of the programs in the department, because we know and we acknowledge that South Africa does not have water, and as such, people need to use water in a very efficient manner. And we have since embarked on a big water conservation, water demand program, particularly with municipalities and metros, and I'm happy to say during that year, we had planned to support 28 municipalities. We ended up supporting 27, and they are all happy with the initiative. Hopefully, they'll be able to manage their water resources accordingly. And we are also equally monitoring water resources in terms of quality on an ongoing basis in all the sites that we have for monitoring. We've produced water quality reports, And we have initiated the water sector regulation strategy, particularly on water services, where we regulate water service authorities in terms of the quality of water that is given to the communities. And we managed to actually work on the Water for Growth and Development Framework, and Cabinet approved for the department to consult on that framework, and that is what we are busy doing this financial year. Next slide. In terms of the water boards and what we do with water boards, all water boards are expected to develop business plans, and we make sure that when those business plans are developed, they are brought to Parliament. And we have also made it a point that all water management institutions, mainly water boards, do their financial reports and financial statements every year, and that is also tabled before Parliament. So the governance issues around water management institutions are quite up to date. On the international front, the department has actually participated in a number of engagements worldwide, and this has informed officials and practitioners within the water sector to improve their activities in providing water to our society. And we have signed some memorandum of understanding with most of our neighboring countries, possibly except Zimbabwe, because of the challenges in that country. But in terms of our understanding in managing water resources in the region, particularly on those shared water systems, we are doing quite well. Next slide. This will be my last slide, Chair, because the rest of the slides talk to the detail of what we want to do. There is still license application backlog, and we say we want to eradicate the backlog in the MTF period, and for this financial year we want to actually eradicate 30% of the backlog that exists. We aim to provide water use licenses to people, of which 20% will be from HDI, but of course this is also dependent on the demand side. We want to ensure that land reform projects where activities will necessitate water will be given water use licenses so that those people could use water. And we are very careful with our water quality, and we say we need to improve particularly those systems that supply the bulk of the water to our society and make sure that the water quality is improved. And we also want to handle the question around wastewater treatment works, where most of them have to be authorized. You have wastewater treatment works that are not authorized in the country. We aim to save 40 million cubic meters of water through our water management agencies or in all the water management areas in the country, particularly in large systems such as the Vaal and Umngeni system. And in terms of balancing water demand and water supply, the Vaal system, Umngeni system, and Algoa and Berg systems are our priority at the moment, because that is where the growth points economically in this country are taking or are located. And Chair, let me stop.
Thank you, Dr. Mkize. You've set a very bad example. You're supposed to be 10 minutes on your time. You took 20 minutes. How I wish, of course, taking into effect that you are also going to be responding. Perhaps altogether we should talk 15 minutes with the responses included in that 15 minutes. For the rest of other presenters. Thanks. saying 15, I'm sure you can do even less than that. We're also going to be pressured with time here. In the main, the aim of this whole exercise also must be about these members of parliament having to have enough time to do what they are employed to do.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, I'll try my level best. Let's go to the next slide. The key highlights slide. There's a list of the acronyms that we have used. Chair, I'm not going to talk much. I think these have been adequately covered by the acting DG in her opening, and I will be speaking to them as I go through each key indicator. Next slide. Chair, one of the things that we picked up as a department is the need to develop regional bulk infrastructure. So in as far as, even though we say we're not responsible for the development of infrastructure, that's the responsibility of local government, we have taken this function upon ourselves. So in the last financial year, the target was to implement 32 projects. However, we were only able to do 22. And two of these have been completed. I need to mention that we're looking here at big projects that get implemented over a period of more than 1 year. So that is why progress can be interpreted as being slow. We completed 46 feasibility studies against the target of 49. Here, Chair, I'm going to also try and answer the question that was asked by the Honourable Member then. And just give a little bit of history. The provision of water and sanitation to schools and clinics is the responsibility of the Department of Health and the Department of Education. However, due to the fact that these two departments have struggled and were not able to meet the target of providing these services to the schools, we took it upon ourselves as a department to assist. The target for providing water to clinics was 2010, and our target as a department was just to focus on rural clinics. So in as far as the information that we got from the Department of Health, we believe we have managed to provide water and sanitation to the rural clinics that we identified. However, after completion, it emerged that actually that list was not comprehensive. So there is now a process that the Department of Health is following to complete the provision of service to the clinics that have been unsaved. This is the progress we have made with regards to schools. I'm going to talk to the challenges that we're facing right at the end. Next slide. Looking at the integrated basic services, I think the concern of all members here is, are we making enough progress in as far as providing water to communities is concerned? There are still communities, yes, that are not accessing services. There are communities where infrastructure has been provided to, but there's no water coming from the taps. It's a whole complex kind of environment. And we're saying this is a problem of government as a whole. COPTA has just done an evaluation of the state, the challenges of facing local government in delivering services. And they've come up with a very comprehensive report that is highlighting issues of capacity, leadership issues at local government level, the fact that we've not been investing in new infrastructure, economic growth, rural-urban migration that are really putting pressure on even the services that exist. The fact of the matter is we are making progress. Every year, new people get connected to the services. But the fact that we're not investing, there isn't proper operation and maintenance of the infrastructure at local government level, it means even though we're adding new people, but some people are not accessing the services because there's no proper maintenance. But again, if you look at the extent of the situation, you look at available budget per year, there is only so much. So it means per year you can only serve so many people. And the sad reality is there will be people who are not getting the service because there is so much money that government has. Other people will get the service later. And when we look at water is life, that is totally unacceptable. But, Chair, it is the reality of the situation. We continue to support local government, and we're doing a lot. But if you look at the extent of the challenges that are facing this sphere of government, it's like a drop in the ocean. From our side, Chairperson, we regard we're taking the support function very seriously. It's a function that has not adequately been funded because we struggle to conceptualize what it would mean to support local government effectively. And as a result, we have not been able to get the funding that we require from Treasury. If it was not, for instance, if we did not access donor funding, we wouldn't have been able to do any of the programs that we're looking at here. But we continue to give this function priority. Next slide. Drinking water quality management. Chair, I need to say and also try and address the question that was asked. This is an ongoing challenge. Again, it's linked to the technical expertise and the ability of local governments to operate and manage their water business. You will get a municipality like Cape Town doing well for 3 months, but on the fourth month there's a problem with their water quality. So it's about our ability to monitor that and make sure that systems or mechanisms are put in place to rectify the situation. So much as we say we're making progress and there isn't a gradual improvement, there are still areas where this function is not well managed. And again, it comes to the fact that we are now realizing 5 years after that some municipalities were given functions that they should never have been given in the first place, because irrespective of the amount of funding and support that you invest in those municipalities, there isn't an improvement. So I think government has reached a point where we say something needs to be done, and this is the work that Minister Shigrega is doing currently, working with other government departments. Sector performance, yes, we continue to do that. We have identified that MIG, as a funding model, has some serious weaknesses. The fact that, for instance, it's not addressing operation and maintenance of infrastructure is a serious problem. So it means MIG is just focusing on building new infrastructure, no money. Or rather, there isn't proper or effective investment in the O&M, operation and maintenance. So we are addressing those, and we're hoping that the new MIG policy will reflect these challenges. Let's move. Sector collaboration, the nature of our work requires us to work to have effective intergovernmental relations. And because of the legislation, there isn't much we can achieve. That is why we attribute a lot of importance to building this. And this is the kind of work that we are doing. The acting DG talked about the need to have linkages with other departments, especially if you're looking at the fact that water is central to development. No other sector can achieve its MDGs without water. And this is why we want it to be central to all development plans, especially in the provinces. We have developed a whole set of strategies. There is a list in the annual report. Again, the challenge is about implementing those strategies. We have also, Chair, developed a draft strategy to strengthen our compliance and enforcement implementation and capacity. We do have a unit. It's a semi-unit at this point in time, and Chair, I think this is a criticism given the extent of the challenge of non-compliance, not only by municipalities, but also by industries and all those people that are polluting our resource. So this is an area that we're going to have to focus on moving forward. Let's move. Look at compliance and monitoring. This is just a summary of the cases that we have dealt with in the last financial year. We had issued 231 notices of intent. This weekend, for instance, Chairperson, there was a question about the state of the treatment works in the country. there's a, an article that was in the newspapers in the Eastern Cape about the state of treatment works, and this weekend we will be issuing a notice of intent to issue a directive to Amatwale municipality. So that's the kind of work that one is looking at under this. And that progress per sector gives you an idea of who the perpetrators are and how much progress has been made in that regard. HIV and AIDS strategy. This is a pilot program that we developed utilizing the funding from the donors. Ideally, if you look at the centrality of water in development, it would really be useful to have more of these programs. However, given the funding and the fact that we're not expecting additional funding from Treasury, it's a pity that we'll not be able to duplicate this pilot program in other provinces. Otherwise, it has proved to be a very good program, and we have learned some lessons from it. We also have a responsibility to work with the CSOs. They assist, and I think the work that they do also complements what Parliament does in the sense that they're monitoring the impact of government programs. So we have made it our priority to build their support and to utilize them in our delivery model. Let's move. Access to basic water, I think I've talked to this. Chair, the fact of the matter is we still have not met the bucket eradication program target. And it's due to availability of bulk water, the problems that particularly the Northern Cape and the Free State provinces encountered in the process. So, but we are helping the municipalities to finalize the program and to meet the target. There was a question raised about the transfer of schemes and the challenges that municipalities are encountering in the process. So when the assets were transferred, at the time, the department had a responsibility to make sure that the municipalities have the infrastructure that will enable them to deliver on their mandate to provide water to people. It is a fact that at that time there wasn't capacity. And yes, it is a fact that there are serious signs of infrastructure that is deteriorating. We have put in place some interventions like providing technical expertise in the form of contractors, consultants, training, taking staff from the municipalities, especially those that deal with process, and providing that kind of training. However, those interventions, given the extent of the challenge, are not adequate to deal with the operation of infrastructure. So it is a concern. We are looking at developing a business plan that will lead to a nationally driven program that addresses comprehensively the state of water and sanitation infrastructure in the country holistically. Okay. Ensuring protection of water resources quality. This speaks to compliance, but it also really speaks to ability of one of the key polluters, Chairperson, is government, the municipality. And this comes from the fact that I've already talked about lack of operation and maintenance. So I think this is an area that's going to be addressed when we address holistically the state of infrastructure. Through our Working for Water program, we have managed to clear 197,000 hectares, and this leads obviously to savings in available water. 100% of all the municipalities, there is, maybe without necessarily looking at it, there is more awareness, Chairperson, on the part of the municipalities on the need to ring-fence their water business, irrespective of the fact that they do still have challenges, but that in terms of reporting on water, there has been an improvement. We have 20 readiness studies, 15 completed, and this speaks to bulk infrastructure and the operation thereof. Next slide. So, the challenge that a government is facing is
the delegation from the Royal Bafokeng is being requested to leave. Am I right? Let's thank the delegation for having had time to come and learn. You did say you've come to learn here. And hopefully that you're not coming for the last time. You wanted to say one word? Kush.
Thank you, the Honorable Chairperson, the House at large. When we came here this morning, our eyes were closed. Now our eyes are slightly opened. Let this not be the first and the last. Once more, thank you. Thanks.
Thank you. Members, you also shall have seen that the court chairperson is not here. She had to go to the doctor because she is not well. Other members also had to go, so Ms. Lulani and also Hoshi Matebe, because of other meetings that they had, respectively at 12 and 1 o'clock. Thanks. We'll continue.
Thank you, Chair. Created about 30,000 jobs in the Working for Water program, and the stats there give a list of who has benefited from the program. This is a program that really has potential to create jobs and to much more sustainable jobs if we focus on supporting SMEs within the program itself. Okay. Challenges. In the school's water and sanitation program, we experience some various challenges. The fact that in these schools are located in rural areas, it means the construction period is delayed because even access to water itself, which is an input to the construction process, is a challenge. So there are delays in a nutshell without going through that, Chairperson. We are of the opinion that with the escalating construction prices as well, we're likely to not meet the target of providing all schools with water and sanitation. Yes, the next slide. I've talked to the bucket eradication program, the fact that we still have not met the target, and the solution, we've applied our minds to what the solution should be, and we are supporting the affected provinces. So the state of infrastructure in the country is a worrying one. There are several interventions. I've talked about the revision of the MIG policy. I've talked about what that we're doing to develop a business plan and the negotiations that we're having with National Treasury to get dedicated funding to fund this program. Next slide. On the transfers, we're still having problems in the sense that not all staff has been transferred, and particularly in Mpumalanga, where we're negotiating with the union. There are municipalities, and this was a question that came from the room as well, there are municipalities that have failed, sure, that have failed to report. And in those cases, we have withheld the transfers for certain quarters. But we have also been proactive in the sense that we do have dedicated support to the municipalities just on financial management. It was an issue in the previous audit report, but we have now since improved because of those interventions. The solutions, I think I have outlined them there, and I have run out of time, but I've come to the end of my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, we propose proposal is a reason that the branch finance and also the corporate services areas be postponed for later time. We now deal more with the content of what is expected to be done by the department. And then all the admin areas, we can deal with them later on. Is that an acceptable proposal? So that we allow time more for ourselves to engage with the content of what is expected in terms of service delivery. I take that is no disagreement too. Mama?
Are we going to be allowed to ask some questions on forestry? Because some of us went through the report.
We are into that now.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. Who else is expected? Yeah, if you could just, you know, speed up.
I will be brief, Jefferson, because some of the issues we've been. I'm the Deputy Director General for, as I've introduced myself this morning. I just want to start by saying for enable for the DDG regions or provinces to deal with the issues of service delivery, we are the people in terms of the implementation of the infrastructure, and obviously we are depending on Dr. Keys in terms of the planning going forward. So there's a strong interrelationship between the three DDGs in terms of the service delivery. As I go along, Jefferson, I will, although there was only one specific question to me, but I will take the others as I go, because there's some interrelated questions that are relating to me that is very important to the work that we are doing. Next slide, please. I will keep with the key highlights, the performance against the targets, the future performance, the additional project information. I'm not going to talk on that because the information is available within the annual report and within the slides, and then I will just touch on the challenges. Thank you. Key highlights, the Nyaka treatment works, we've completed phase one. It's serving for the people of Bushbuck Ridge. What I want to emphasize here, Chairperson, is that our infrastructure is focusing on four provinces in particular. Limpopo is our number one province that we focus in terms of infrastructure development. KZN, Eastern Cape, and Mpumalanga that we're focusing our attention in terms of infrastructure delivery. The Vaal River Eats Eastern Subsystem Augmentation Project, this is for Cecil and Eskom. We've completed that in terms of a value of $2.7 billion. And then that supply an additional 160 million cubic meters to the industries on the western high parts of Mpumalanga. And we have commissioned the pump sets. I will give you some photos with regard to the slide. The Bergwater project was launched by the president last year, and it was completed at a cost of 1.55 billion, and it supplied an additional 80 million cubic meters of water to the city of Cape Town and surrounding areas. We have completed the rehabilitation and refurbishment in terms of our dams, 21 dams completed, 20 dams are under construction, and 9 dams are in the design stage. We must understand that most of these particular projects, it is a long lead time before we implement, and it takes a number of years to implement some of these particular projects. That's enormous investments for South Africa. And then the adoption of the Social Economic Development Charter for promoting BBBEE objectives for the sector, particularly with regard to construction. Next slide. I just wanted to say that this is I've put some slides on this is the wrong presentation that has been loaded, but I will continue with it. There was the bill for the establishment of an agency that was withdrawn, Jefferson, from the previous parliament, and to an extent that was for the establishment of an agency, and that bill was withdrawn from the parliamentary process. If I can just ask for the operator to load the other presentation where specific slides are in terms of the works, that because it's very important that members see the work that we are doing, because I've there's the one with pictures and the one without pictures. That one. That is the presentation. Thank you. Okay. Can you continue slides? Okay. This is the Burkwater Dam that provides for Cape Town in addition to its supply, as I've indicated, opening by the President. It was done mostly by water service agreement with the City of Cape Town and built to the cost that I've indicated in that one. This is the Vaal River Eastern Subsystem Augmentation Project in terms of the abstraction work, and this is at the cost of the $2.5 billion in terms of out of the Vaal River for the Western High Belt for our energy sector. Thank you. The Wub Dam that what we currently under construction is in Limpopo to supply water to the Nebo Plateau and also for Eskom for pump storage for additional electricity. This is the project in its totality will be 5.5 billion rand. Next one. Just an illustration of the work that's going on in terms of construction. Next slide. And this is the dam rehabilitation, Tuleni Dam. This is in the Eastern Cape in terms of the work that we're doing to make sure that the infrastructure is in good condition for us to supply to the municipalities and to other water users. Next one. This is also in the Eastern Cape in terms of the work that we're doing in terms of the budget, MDF budget of 1.2 billion rand. Again, to make sure that you can see on the left the conditions and to the right that we're improving. And this is what Tandeka was referring to, that where we, in terms of focusing water resources, to make sure that our infrastructure is in good condition, the same that we would like that municipalities take that kind of approach to make sure that South Africa's water infrastructure at that level is in a very good condition. Next one. This is Limpopo Dam. In terms of the Malopo Dam, in terms of our rehabilitation, if we don't do this kind of work, we cannot provide and supply the kind of water, and this comes at a huge investment for South Africa. Thank you. And just further for the Nsami Dam, where we face a major drought, a localized drought, in terms of where the dam is at the moment below 5%, and that is posing challenges in terms of the natural conditions, what my colleague Cesare was referring to this morning in terms of climate change and also what the acting DG was referred to in her presentation. I've referred to the bill, the Nondoni treatment works. We have completed, we have set the target of 96, we have achieved 95%. We have commissioned the valve system. I'm not going to go further in that. The Duwip Dam, we are progressing very well with the dam, 36% completion. And the futuristic indications I will go later on. In Nyaka treatment work, we've completed the phase one, as I've indicated, and this is phase two, where we're progressing very well in terms of the 54% to provide plus minus 1 million households in Bushbuck region and Mpumalanga. The Sluswi regional regional works that we supply to the northern part of KZN, we are 62% completion, but also from a perspective where we can provide water in an ongoing basis in terms of construction, that is what we're doing at the moment to the northern parts of KwaZulu-Natal, particularly within the Ukuslamba District Municipality. The Nandoni treatment work, we've completed the dam. We are now with the completion in terms of the work that we are doing for the northern parts, the providing of water, the pipelines for the communities and all the people up to Makado or Louis Richard, in terms of the CBF 64% and above our targets that we've set ourselves. But we have a challenge, Chairperson, with regard to the material in terms of the GRP pipelines, what we call it, the glass fiber pipelines, where we have done in terms of the design. Not going for stainless steel, going for GRP, and obviously people have provided department with an inferior kind of product, and we are now with the legal services and with the state law advisors in terms of this particular process. So it's at the moment it's sub judice for me to talk about it, but it is a matter that we are working on, and it's a serious matter in terms of the government and investment with regard to that. This is just an illustration of the Nondoni Dam and the way that we supply of the project and also in terms of what we've done within that part of Limpopo province. Next slide. We're looking at the whole of the building of the infrastructure. We've constructed the dam in the vicinity of 1.5 billion, and we're going to supply for those particular areas in Limpopo. Next slide. These are the raw water distribution work at the cost of 300 million that we've constructed, plus minus 700 people. We had an Ondoni distribution project, and as Tandeka was referring to earlier on, if we're going to transfer this particular infrastructure to a municipality, then what then happens? It's a big challenge. And I answered, that is one of the questions that's been answered here, Chairperson. Where we put this mega infrastructure, huge cost to government, and it's going to be run down. This is the discussion, political debate that we had, and this is the debate that we had with the Premier of Limpopo, our minister had with regard to such a project that we put in for communities. The next slide, this is just the pipelines and the reservoir and distribution network to make sure that that the water can be distributed. Next slide. Slides of the infrastructure in terms of the cost, also 85 million for the Secundu Way for abstraction for the community to be served, and the building of the reservoir and a pipeline of plus minus 65 kilometers. Distribution line and reticulation. And honourable members must understand, as I said earlier on, that some of this work can take you, you know, between 2 to 3 years in terms of the medium term expenditure framework. In terms of our engagement with Treasury is very critical, and in terms of the timelines for the implementation. I've got about 4 more minutes left, Chairperson, of time to conclude. Just as an example, in terms of the extensive network that people can see, is that from the various communities where we're going and the extent of the work that we're doing, and obviously this requires a lot of technical skills and one of the areas that we're struggling with. Next slide. The refurbishment of the regional treatment work Malamulela is also in Limpopo. Next slide. And then the middle Letaba also in Limpopo, where we have pump stations and the delivery pipelines, and we're building of sludge dams to make sure that we provide the kind of services to the communities. Now, Chairperson, from a perspective, what is also important, that operation and maintenance with regard to this, and we have done all the conclusions of in terms of our operation and maintenance of some of the institutions that do our work, and particularly some of the water boards that assist us in doing our work, and we have those kind of agreements in place. Next slide. I've talked about the dam safety. That it's already been indicated. This is just further examples of the terms of our refurbishment work. This is in the Eastern Cape. Continue, ma'am. This is also in terms of the balancing dam, in terms of the way that we have to deal with the water coming out of the Orange River, and in terms of the treatment. Next slide. Desalting and relining of balancing dam, you can see onto the left, and in terms of the rehabilitation. Next slide. And this is the replacement of pipelines that we provide Nelson Mandela Bay, Metro Municipality in the Eastern Cape, and it's the extent of work that we're doing in terms of operation maintenance. Next slide. This is an example. And then this is the siphon that we repair at Henke. Next slide. Just a further illustration of the work that we're doing in Limpopo for the Macor. And then the rehabilitation work is on track. We emergency plans implemented for most of our dams. And then what is also important that we make sure that the work can be completed on time. Next, I said that I don't want to deal with additional projects, but if members want to ask, I'm more than welcome to. But that is just deeper information with regard to the projects. This is, Chairperson, what I want to talk here. This is an additional dam that we plan for the greater Zanin and Bapolaborwa municipality in the Limpopo, and that is to increase our security supply, visit the Wamitwa Dam that we plan, and obviously we need to get cabinet approval before we start with this, but there's one or two things that we have to do here, and also the distribution work. What is still outstanding is just the environmental approvals that we need for this particular piece of infrastructure. But my colleague, Dr. McKees, is working on this particular aspect in terms of the implementation for this particular, at a cost of $1.1 billion for the supply of water within Limpopo. This is, in addition, the distribution network to all the communities that we indicate in terms of service delivery, in terms of government's priorities, in terms of basic services, but also agriculture and also for other industrial development within the greater Zanin, within the greater Mopani district municipality. Future performance, we're linking the targets with overall government aims. This is just what we intend. We want to move to 41% for the WIRP completion, 99% for Nondoni, and then we will then lastly look in terms of the Umhlanga to start with the raising of the Hazelmere Dam. I just want to wrap up, Chairperson. Next slide, please. The others that we need to do, we're going to start with the Springbok Dam for Etiquini in this financial year. We're starting with the Komati project, and then we start with the Makolo project for the Eskom power stations. And just Makolo, okay, thank you. Next, okay. If there are further questions, Chairperson, then I would be glad to answer in terms of the specifics with regard to some of the projects. I thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Rappel. Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. The presentation will cover the areas that are outlined there, including performance information, future performance, and how the work that we do in forestry link up with the overall aims of government. But before I proceed with the presentation, I just want to address one issue that was raised by the Honorable Member regarding post-settlement support. Chairperson, the issue of post-settlement support was presented by the acting DG as a challenge because to date, we have not successfully been able to deal with the issue. In terms of the form of the type of post-settlement support that we expect in the future is that we should be able to realize that post-settlement support is linked to land reform and restitution. And when it comes to forestry, ideally, what we would like to see happen is that when land is restored to communities, and that land is currently being used for forestry, communities should be encouraged to continue with the practice to ensure that the security of supply of timber. But for communities to be able to do that, Chairperson and honorable members, it is incumbent on government to make sure that communities are provided with their support. Next slide, please. Having covered that area that is still a challenge, in the past financial year for the program, we were able to achieve in a number of areas relevant to what was presented by the Chief Financial Officer. In the Western Cape, Cabinet gave us permission to recommission about 22,000 hectares to resume plantation forestry. Honorable members would recall that a few years back, government had taken a decision that in some of the provinces, as a way of managing water catchment management areas, there was an intention by government to not allow plantation forestry in those provinces. So here we can report that we have that permission, and we are also looking at Mpumalanga as another province where we could ask cabinet to reconsider its position. In the province of KwaZulu-Natal, we had a number of challenges related to Tuku-Tuku as an area. And the problems that are associated with Tuku-Tuku forests are very complex because they are linked to other social issues. After application to the cabinet in the form of a submission and in collaboration with the premier and the ministers responsible, again, cabinet approved that we can allow people to be resettled in Tuku-Tuku forest. It is an ongoing process, and we are expected to report back to cabinet on this particular issue. In terms of planning for the future, what we have successfully done in the last financial year was to develop what we see as a long-term view for forestry to say, in the future, what do we expect? We have come up with a roadmap which we see as a blueprint. The good thing about the roadmap is that it's not only designed or developed by government, it is done by the sector in collaboration with all the role players. Our responsibility towards contributing to the global effort of greening the planet and mitigating climate change, we believe that South Africans came to the fore because we were able to plant more than 1 million trees in the last financial year. When it comes to matters related to the community chairperson, community forestry restitution, the minister was able to sign a head lease agreement with the Kwambonambi community in KwaZulu-Natal. This was following the confirmation and the conclusion of the restitution process for this particular community. And in this financial year, we were able to hand over an amount of more than 10 million to this community. On the continent and regionally, Chairperson, we were able to successfully host a forest governance workshop which talked broadly about issues on how do we decentralize the management of forestry in the continent. It was an initiative that was supported by the Swiss government, and we were able to, in April, in South Africa, to present the outcomes in New York to the United Nations. And because of the nature of the challenges of managing forests as a common good, it is an initiative that will see us as a country in the following year collaborating again with the Swiss government and the government of Mexico to look at the issues in Southern America to say, once you have discussed governance issues in Africa, how relevant would they be compared to other parts of the world? Next slide, please. In terms of the performance information, honorable members, the detailed information is covered in the annual report itself. You will please excuse me if I seem to be running through the slides. This first slide presents to you the framework that we use for sustainable forest management. We follow what we call a national forest program, and again, we are very fortunate because the development of the program itself was done by not utilizing state resources, but by utilizing money that came from the United Nations. So through the assistance of the Food and Agriculture Organization, we now have a document that guides us in doing the work that we do. And also, in terms of government's plan of action, forestry is one of those key areas that are identified as capable to contributing to the industrial policy of the country, and we focus mainly on paper, pulp, and furniture. And in the last financial year, the committees could take note that we were able to export forest goods to the value of 14 billion rands, and we imported, I would say, another 11 billion rands, but you can see there's a balance of about 3 billion, which means as a sector we are contributing. And government itself, as an employer in this sector, we employ about 3,000 people, but the sector overall employs more than 150,000 people. So economically, social benefit, rural contribution, we are making a contribution. Next slide, please. This particular slide, Chairperson, reflects on the commitment that we had made when it comes to transforming the sector. Mentioning the people who work in the industry, the forest sector industry, mentioning the amount of money that goes into export and import, it would be of interest to all of us to know how much of those resources are really controlled by people who were previously disadvantaged. In May 2008, we were able to sign a charter. The charter is signed by the private companies, the various government departments, and also some of the state-owned enterprises. Institutionally, we have managed to appoint the staff that would be responsible for the implementation of the charter, and we would like to report to the committee that, again, it presents a very good example of stakeholder alignment, because the running of the charter processes is dually funded by government and the private sector. Government carries 60% of the cost. The private companies are carrying 40% of the cost. The challenge that we have with regard to the charter itself, implementing it, is on the primary side, because the charter clearly indicates that for the sector to grow and to continue to deliver jobs and ensure that there's rural development, we need to be able to plant a certain number of hectares per year. And when Dr. Mkhize was presenting, he articulated the fact that licensing remains a challenge for us as government. Next slide, please. In terms of the licensing issues, you will see that, honorable members, on that particular slide, we did not plant as much as we had expected. Unfortunately, it is a regulated process. There isn't much that we can do. On the community side, there is a number of projects that are given there that we were able to achieve in various provinces. I'm not going to go through the list. Next slide. The next slide still carries on with the projects that were feasible in the various provinces. And the rest of the information there, honorable members, refers to the conservation responsibility that we have as forestry. On an annual basis, we are mandated to make sure that certain trees are protected. That's why we issue the list and we do the publication and so on. And that is, if you move to the next slide, we are able to do that because in terms of the legal mandate, we are simply adhering to the provisions of the National Forest Act. My colleagues from WOTA mentioned issues of compliance and enforcement as difficult areas. Even for forestry, we have to apply our minds and check if we are to make sure that people adhere to the provisions of the legal mandate of forestry, what is required, and we are able to come up with a framework that proposes how enforcement and compliance could be done. Again, the CFO, when he was presenting, he was able to inform you that in terms of revenue, we collected, I think, about 46 million rands in the past year. And we are able to do that because we follow a process where on an annual basis we determine the tariffs for selling timber. It's a consultative process that requires that our minister has got concurrence from the minister responsible for finance. I would like to report here that even though we mention in there as an actual achievement that in terms of compliance we were able to determine the new tariffs, the committee should just take note that we were not able to implement the new tariffs in this financial year because there was representation made to the minister now responsible for forestry, and she made the determination that much as the tariffs are very good for government for collecting revenue, she saw the tariffs as a stumbling block because if we are serious about transformation, we shouldn't be coming up with tariffs that end up denying the small growers and the small sawmillers access to the timber that they need for other processes that are associated with the value chain of forestry. So we have not implemented the tariffs, which means it will have an impact on the revenue that we're going to collect in this particular year. Next slide. The other responsibility that we have, Chairperson and honorable members, is to make sure that the South African public is made aware and is taking responsibility when it comes to issues of managing fire as a risk, and acting DG says I've got 1 more minute. So, Chairperson, maybe with your protection, can I request that honorable members accept that they will note the information that is there in the presentation. I just want to highlight one more area to say, when it comes to managing fire, we rely on the responsiveness of the municipalities, and we also rely on the responsiveness of the landowners, because if landowners do not have resources to make sure that prevention measures are in place, it becomes very difficult. On our side as government, what we do is we try and have a system that allows to, which acts more like an early warning system, so that we are able to determine, for instance, that on a particular day, the Eastern Cape is a high-risk area. We need to make sure that we are ready to act if something happens. And regrettably, it is one area where we've got to be very vigilant, because if we don't do our work as government in collaboration with the landowners, we tend to lose lives and we lose the forest resources. Chairperson, with that, can I request that the committee will take note of the rest of the report? And thank you very much.
To round up, Mama Gela.
Chair, going forward, I wanted to make a proposal to you. Firstly, there are a number of issues that have been raised, and the members may not be happy with the type and the extent of the response that they have received. I've been noticing the body language in some cases of the members, and I want to propose to you that can we furnish you with a written responses in cases where the members are not satisfied? We can do that, and in some cases I would really request members also to indicate the areas where they still need more information from the department. We will do that. That's the area that I thought maybe we need to talk. Thank you.
Members, let's engage. Sorry, your name again? Mr. Morgan. Akhoshi Matef. Noted, Maman.
Chair, excuse me, when you say engage, can we ask questions? Okay. Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I'm particularly interested in the issue of the issue of directives, the notices of intent to issue directives, and the number of directives that have been issued. And you list various sectors, agricultural, mining, and then other organs of state. I presume that list isn't exhaustive, because you would presumably also issue directives against municipalities or pre-directives. But the issue that I'm really interested in here is how few notices and few directives have been issued against mines in South Africa. Now, you know that I asked the parliamentary question on the mining licenses, of which the minister replied 104. Now, on that particular issue, and I would appreciate your comments on it, it is the case that many of those mines have probably applied for licenses, and there's something happened, not enough information, and all of, you know, that is stopping the license being granted, and the like. And there are presumably other mines which are truly negligent in operating without even applications. They're different stories. I understand that. Now, I want to know from the department whether it itself is in full compliance with the National Water Act on this particular issue. Because if you know there are mines operating without water licenses, and you have tried and you have done everything to get them to apply for water licenses, and they haven't. I mean, there are surely two options here. One is you close them and you issue directives and criminally charge. If you don't you fall foul of the National Water Act yourself? Because you are the department and the minister are the custodians of that act. So I would appreciate your comments on that, and then why so few mining notices and directives have been issued.
Is there a capacity problem here? I mean, you, I guess you could say, well, that's all the mines that have done something wrong. But, I mean, you and I both know that's not the case. And then I would like to engage on the issue of the tariffs. My colleague Annette Lovemore asked that as well. I don't know how much that you will be prepared to say about it, but it seems that water is underpriced in South Africa. And that has huge implications because obviously higher priced water is going to have a drastic effect, devastating effect, on as an input to various processes, agriculture, industry, and most importantly, affects the ability of particularly the poor and indigent to access water. So the consequences are severe. I accept that. But are you going to spring a major hike on us at sometime in the future? Provocative question, but I appreciate your comments on it, because the hike, the tariff hike by Eskom has been, you know, it's been exorbitant, and people haven't been able and aren't going to be able to adjust very well, which is going to close some people down. But you guys set the tariffs. You set the tariffs for the water boards and all the like. And there isn't enough money coming in, and there's a 60 to 70 rand, 70 billion backlog in this department. The Treasury doesn't have money to give us for this department. I wish it did. So there has to be more coming in. And at the moment, we're kind of subsidizing a lack of income through by not investing in other projects. So, okay, let me put it this way. You can answer that question, but how are you engaging the issue of tariffs? In the sense that, am I right that water is underpriced, and what are you doing to move it to its correct price? I'll leave it at that, Chair.
Chairperson, I'm really taken aback by what the Acting DG has just said. So say we must indicate areas where we might need the details and then they'll finish them in writing. We've been waiting for some of the answers for more than 2 months. They have not yet finished them to us. Let me remind her. In one meeting, we said they must provide us with a list of projects that are busy with, and also indicate as to which engineers and contractors have been awarded tenders there. Because we are concerned that the communities around those projects and also the emerging engineers and contractors are not being afforded the opportunity to grow. But till today, we're still waiting for that list. And it's more than 3 months. So I'm taking up that when she said we must really indicate where we need the written answer. Will we get them next year or after the end of this term? The other issue that I wanted to raise is in relation to forestry, where Mrs. Rambid said the minister shall sign some lease agreement with Kwambonambi community. To my knowledge, I don't think that there in Richards Bay there is only one community which successfully claimed that forest plantation. I think there are some Mukwanazis and other communities. So what about those other communities? Because he only spoke of Kwambonambi. But I know there are some Mukwanazis and the others. I just forget the other ones. So are they not also benefiting like Bambanambi? And I know of a company called Siakubeka, which is operating there in Richards Bay. Is it also providing something to those communities? Maybe we can also verify that. Thank you, sir.
Mama Ndute.
Thank you, Chair. You know, I just want to take the department to their own vision. That says that a country that uses water and forest productively and in a sustainable manner for social and economic activities, in a manner that promotes growth, development, and prosperity for all people to achieve social justice and equity, and I want to say, and equality. Then, Section 27, 1B of the Constitution says that access to water is a right of every citizen. Again, I'm going to take the department to its own mission. And I will just quote two bullet points there. Ensuring that water services are provided to all South Africans in an efficient, cost-effective, and sustainable way. The other one, it says, educating the people of South Africa in ways to manage, conserve, and sustain the water and forest resources. And there are values, Chair. I want to take the department here through some journey here. In their values, I will just quote two. They are saying, as management, it is the department's responsibility and aim to provide high-quality transformational leadership and a disciplined work ethic and to promote a work culture for motivated, accountable, and committed teamwork. And thus, the last one says, the department's working environment is governed by the principles of representation, equality, mutual respect, and human development, and I want to say, and dignity, and that. Having said that, Chair, I have been listening to the department, not only for today. I think they've been coming to in front of this committee for a number of times now, making different presentations. And I think at some point, maybe they do forget what they said the other time when they come back. I want to agree with the speaker before me that there are a number of questions that have been presented to the department. And you'd think that when they are doing their presentation the next time, that they will actually respond to those by covering those areas that members seek clarity, you know, on, you know, from the department. Listened to the, you know, the input comments and questions by members. It is clear, Chair, that this department is very, very far from actually supplying water as a constitutional right to the majority of South Africans, especially in the rural areas. One can page this department, you know, this document, the annual report. In this report, one of the questions that we posed, and it was not only myself, I'm sure other members, I remember, also Honorable Member Zikalala. It still does not tell us, there's nothing that is specific in this report about the number of the and the number of people in the communities and the provinces that have benefited from the water tanks. And I've also listened the water tanks. You gave us the DG that is on suspension now, appeared in front of this committee to say that you have embarked on one of the projects of supplying water tanks to different communities. And the question then was asked to say which communities, in which areas and the provinces, and I'm saying that answer is still not here. You are just talking about it somewhere here, but it's not specific. In Ms. Mbasa's slide 6 on page 3, I think, one, again, you need to qualify, you know, to say that the sanitation and water has only been supplied
to only schools in the urban areas, not in the rural areas. We can take a gen and go to rural areas, rural schools, and see how many will have sanitation and water. Again, on slide 16 on Ms. Mbasa's slide, slide 16 on page 8, you know, one is still talking about, you know, introducing policies and regulations. I mean, really, policies and regulations are there. The issue is lack of implementation. You cannot tell me that you are still talking about policies and regulations when actually the issue is lack of implementation. And this is the biggest problem that is facing South African government, that politicians take decisions and implementation is never forthcoming from the officials. And this is a very, very serious indictment to our officials, Chairperson. Mr. Reuters, I'm just scanning through, you know, Chair, because of time. Yes. I just want to know from Mr. Reuters, how many dams do you have in the Eastern Cape, and specifically in the old Transkei? Because, Chairperson, seemingly this part, you know, of the country seem to be very much neglected by this department. I would love, really, next time when we concentrate very much on the side of the Transkei to say what exactly the department, because again, we're firing a number of questions regarding that side of the world, and seemingly there's very little that is being done. If I can actually know those number of them, especially in the Eastern Cape on the Transkei side. Thank you.
Mama Mabuza would be followed by Mr. Pretorius, and the last one being Mr. Slav Moore.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Is it you or?
I have to put my hand up long ago.
How come do I have an idea that you're going to be sharing some of those questions? Okay, you know, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is directed to Dr. Rampedi on forestry. The Forest Sector Transformation Charter stipulates that 10,000 hectares need to be planted annually over the period of 10 years. And here, it's not being implemented, and are technical reasons given to say why are they not implementing. Meanwhile, in yesterday's a briefing by the same department, forestry, they indicated that there's a shortage of timber in South Africa. And if there's already a shortage of timber in South Africa, why are they not fast-tracking the implementation of the charter? And if Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal are not adhering to the request by the department, why are they not moving to the next provinces? Secondly, Chairperson, on climate change, on yesterday's presentation, the presentation was too technical, Dr. Rampedi. And some of the ordinary questions that were raised in that meeting, in that briefing, they could not be responded to. Especially on the turning of the blue gum tree leaves into brown instead of green. There were not responses. The thinning of plantations that is taking place as we are talking, it was not responded to. I'm raising this question because even in your own report here, Dr. Rampedi, nothing is said. What you are saying is that there's no data that can be presented to this committee. And to say climate change is taking place and nothing is being done. Our people on the ground are not informed about it, about the changes that are there. You know, there's a lot of things that are taking place. Soil erosion is taking place. And in your report, can we please get proper information of what is taking place in forestry on climate change. Thank you.
Chair, thank you very much. Mama Buza actually read my mind when she asked the question about afforestation, but I also wanted to ask that question, but I will take it slightly further. Just a general comment first. If you go through, I'm talking about forestry specifically, if you go through the performance information slides or systems, it's a general trend that the targets have not been met. And my question is, why are targets not met? Is it a human resources constraint within the department, or is the department setting this the bar too high for themselves that they can't meet it? For example, the 10,000 hectares that was supposed to be planted by March 2009, not achieved. And the comment was made, and the wording was, there's not much that we can do. And that's not acceptable. Something must be done. If they can't do it, then they must use the influence with the other departments who's blocking the system to get it done. And so you can carry on further of things that was said they would do. 118 forestry livelihoods projects would be initiated, and if you counted up, they probably got to 4 or 5. Certain regulations would have been gazetted by August 2008. It hasn't been done, and so we can carry on. But I want to really refer to the 10,000 hectares. I asked a question in the House to the Minister, and I got the information, which is quite shocking information, about whether the existing forest can meet the current and future domestic timber-related needs. And this is where the 10,000 hectares come in. The idea is to plant 10,000 new hectares every year. But we was good after 8. We're moving backwards. The need is for the period 2005 to 2009, there's already a deficit of 13%. And that deficit increases to a deficit of 51% in about 20-odd years. So in 20-odd years from now, we're going to sit with a deficit of 50%. That is based on the current available new land for afforestation, which is about 100,000, 120-odd-thousand hectares, of which just 10,000 would have kicked in already. So what I'm saying is that the 51% is very conservative. We're going to sit with probably a 70 or 80% deficit. My question is, what is the department doing to rectify this looming crisis, because it's a looming crisis and it's moving in the wrong direction? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. I need to get off my heart and express my serious concern about a number of things that were said. I'll leave the questioning, I think, to putting in writing and actually submitting to the Minister. I find it absolutely amazing. And I know it's difficult because we aren't the officials. We don't deal with the issues every day and perhaps understand as well as the officials do. But I find it absolutely amazing that a target is set of 12 months to process an application. I would have thought that an application, when it arrives, like an EIA application, for instance, would have all the necessary information, that all the necessary consultation would have been done. But that a target is set of 12 months, surely that must stand in the way of development. Surely it must actually encourage illegal water use. I'm seriously concerned about our reporting on water quality. We seem to be reporting on microbiological, not seem to be, we are, reporting on microbiological quality. So we will say we're doing wonderfully, 94% of our water complies with specifications, and we're reporting on microbiological only. It is not chemical, and that is a serious omission. The metro specifically was mentioned, that metro that didn't get the blue drop was my home metro of Nelson Mandela Bay. I still believe to this day that water is unsafe to drink, and it is because of aluminium and trihalomethane. It's got nothing to do, in fact, with the microbiological reporting. So reporting on microbiological quality, in fact, is misleading the people of South Africa who are drinking water, and I think that has to be addressed. The actual question that I have is about the authorization of wastewater treatment works. I raised a question to the Minister recently and got some rather alarming replies, Chair. There are a number of wastewater treatment works, and the numbers were not mentioned, but that are not authorized. When I asked why, I was told inter alia that some municipalities do not have the capacity to properly put together an application. Some municipalities, the infrastructure is so bad that they cannot process the sewage or the wastewater properly, so therefore they cannot be authorized. My great concern is that because I tell a municipality it cannot get a permit, basically, so it can't be authorized to discharge of its wastewater, is it going to stop doing so? I doubt it. I think it just carries on regardless, and the fact is that it's not then being monitored. Now, so with that background, I'm very alarmed to see, and it was in Dr. Mkize's presentation, a target, and I hope I'm misunderstanding this, a target of achieving 10% authorization of wastewater treatment works. Does that mean that over 90% currently are unauthorized? That's my question, Chair. Thank you.
Chair, thank you. I'll be brief because I think most of the issues have been touched on. I would like to, however, turn to the auditor's report, and I think it was mentioned quite a few times that we had a clean auditor's report and no qualified opinion on it. But in the report itself, I just want to make sure myself on the issues. There are quite a number of non-compliances with the application of legislation. For instance, on the Treasury regulations, the entity did not implement effective internal controls on inventory stores as required by the Treasury regulations. Secondly, in contravention to the Treasury regulations, so-and-so, the entity had a PMG bank account of overdraft at 31st March of more than nearly 52 million rands. Another issue on Public Finance Management Act, the entity lost motor vehicles at various construction sites, which indicates lack of internal control to ensure the effective safeguarding of assets. Now these things are obviously, sir, it's worrying to us. I think we must get some answers on it. Also, another point here that was mentioned, there was no timeous collection of monies that was due to the entity, and the entity did not perform reconciliation on all the creditors' accounts. So it seems to me that we are told that it is a clean auditor's report, but there are still some outstanding issues, and I think maybe we should just ask if they are going to look at it. My second question is again on licensing, and in the report, so there is the allocation, improved water allocation, and the backlog as far as license applications are concerned. Now, obviously, I understand that they have a system of allocation, water reallocation program. But there are a lot of, and we're getting just percentages here, but there are a lot of water license transfer applications. Are they included in this figure? And what I would like to see is that we must be given the numbers of applications that for water license transferees. How many of them have been transferred, and what are the reasons for the non-transferable licenses that are still lagging back? The reason why I'm asking is because this is impacting on agricultural production. I know that most of the licenses are applications to productive agricultural land, and if you do not have or do not transfer the licenses to owners or new owners or whoever they might be, that irrigation systems are illegal and cannot be performed or actually used, and they can be shut down. And that impacts on agricultural production and our food sustainability. Thank you, sir.
Can I just quickly add, as you proceed with your responses, so much has been said out in the media about Sadaruga being the step water resource area. And then lately we've been hearing more and more statements from your side, I think there was a question also from the other side of the members here, with regards to the revision of your tariff structures. Whether as a country we are not going to find ourselves trapped with the same situation that Eskom has found itself in, and the preparedness laziness on our part as a country. And also, to what an extent will all of this, because I would take it as more of an administered pricing aspect, which therefore would push up, you know, the inflation issues. To what an extent are we ready as a country to supply water, let alone quality water? That we are said to be a water-scarce country on a more sustainable basis. And to what an extent also are we going to be, are we not going to be able to push all those, you know, inflationary factors as part of the administered cost? Water service being one of those, let alone other services like electricity and so on and so forth. If we're going to, just as you round up your responses. That being the first round, and then we'll come back with the second round. I take it, members, that we are committed to trying to conclude. I also shall stand by your own guidance on this matter.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity to respond to the questions. Chairperson, I think it is prudent that I acknowledge and apologize. The Honourable Member is correct. We were in this room where he requested information on PSPs and the contractors, particularly with the construction unit of the department. She's correct. And also the issue around the information around the rainwater harvesting, the member is correct. I really don't want to be giving excuses, and I think we are, to some extent, wanting in terms of responding on time. And it's something I really want to commit to the members going forward, that we are going to, as leadership, as top management, we've taken your comments quite serious, and we are going to work on it. I agree fully with you. We've not. And this links up to the whole issue of our behavior aligning to the values that are contained in the annual report. And it talks against that. And I agree with the Honourable Member. For if you're saying you're professional, if you're saying you're responsive, you must be able to respond within the stipulated time, and the time was reasonable enough. We're given almost a month to respond to those issues. I think it is prudent that I'm apologizing, and I'm really accepting that we've really not complied and demonstrated the level of behavior and expectation as contained in our value statement, Chairperson. And I will when we go out of this session, we'll do our best to get the responses to you. He's right on that one. In terms of Chairperson, the issue.
If you were to say by when?
Chairperson, can I request your understanding around the 25th of October, is it too far? Would you accept that, please? 25th of October. Okay, 26th of October. Please, Chair. Please, Honourable Member. I'm very sorry for that one. Okay. Chair, so what I'm going to do, I am going to, because there are a number of areas that we are really working on, and I agree with the members. One of the issues that has come up in a number of forums is, at this point in time, 50 years down the line, we're still busy developing framework, we're still busy with regulations, and we're still busy with all sorts of things. How do you expect the members of parliament to go back to the public and report on progress and impact if we're still busy with instruments in terms of implementation? And there's been, on numerous occasions, concerns raised around our capability to implement, really to move to an implementation space rather than really developing frameworks and regulations. And we might have to also, the department, go back to reconsider to say when we come here, do we really want to sort of report on regulations that we are developing and frameworks that we are developing, or other on the implementation and the challenges and request the committee to guide us. I'm going to request the CFO to respond to the issues of pricing strategy. We are working on this pricing strategy, but I'm going to, and he is leading the task team that is working on the pricing strategy. And I also want to indicate to the members that Treasury themselves have raised questions around, after asking us questions, what do you want to do going forward around the pricing strategy and the issues as affected. But the pricing strategy is also linked to issues of water security, which the chair has also raised. And also I would like Dr. Reuters also to talk on the issue of water security. What are we doing? Is there a crisis? Do we have a water crisis? Yes or no? And if there is, what are we doing? If there's not, but what are we doing to make sure that we don't get to a point where there's water crisis? And I agree with the chairperson. There's been media statements around water crisis and all sorts of things around water. Maybe we need to really also to give a sense of comfort to the members that we are doing something and we are taking those media statements quite serious. I will request DDG Region to talk about issues of water access and also issues of rural development. How are we contributing to rural development in terms of water and sanitation to schools and other and clinics? And Dr. Rampedi will address the issues from the honorable members around forestry, and Dr. Mkize also the issues around the non-achievement of targets, and I think it's something, as we go back to the person, we need to reflect. In cases where we've indicated to this committee that we've set targets and we've also not been able to meet those targets, what does it mean going forward, and what is the impact of us not achieving what we promised to achieve in terms of this document? So those are the issues. And also, Dr. Mkize, you have to talk on the initiative to deal with the issue of bucket, sort of license eradication, and maybe also being also honest and upfront to the members about what are the problems that we've been facing around licensing and what are we doing to turn around the situation. Thank you. CFO, can you take on the members on the pricing strategy, please?
Thank you, Chair and the honorable members. I think I did allude during my presentation about the audit outcome and the history thereof. And when I give my responses on the question that has just been asked before I go to the pricing strategy, because the question was on page 262 and 262 in particular of the annual report, make certain reference to matters that were highlighted by the AG and whether we are doing anything about it or not. The answer is for us to have walked up to where we are is because we have been acting. We have not been dormant on the issues raised by the Auditor General. We initiated the process, for example, of Sakile, where we looked and verified the bulk water infrastructure, and we had a register, if you remember the history that I took you through. And that's why you not see issues around asset surfacing on this. Issues around revenue surface in the 2007-2008 report, where the data could not be confirmed and reconciliations had been done, had to be done in order for us to end with the opinion we have at present. Yes, interest, for example, could not be charged on some of the data accounts because you don't charge interest until you have presented an accurate statement of account to the water user and give that person that you agree that this is the amount, and from that date, after you have agreed, you start charging interest. That's why interest was never charged, and that's why that matter does not appear as a basis of qualification on the financial statement. The other non-compliance issue around the asset laws and construction side are risk management issues. We have built up for security. Now, what we have done each time we get the auditor's final report, what we do is that we prepare an action plan addressing those areas of weaknesses that the Auditor General would have raised. And we have already done that. So what we need to do, honorable members, is perhaps in our next meeting, you may want to demand that we share with you the progress we have made on those particular issues as we approach that 1st March 2010, but it's not that we have kept quiet about those matters. Now, coming to the issue of pricing strategy, We have obviously identified the shortcomings in the pricing strategy, and the question would be, why has it taken as long up to this particular stage? It's again a reflection of the history that I articulated when I went through my presentation. Without an asset register for the movable assets, and without certain information, as it was evident in the disclaimer handed by the Auditor General of the Water Trading Entity in 2005 and 2006, it would not have been possible to understand what the implication of the current pricing strategy would have been, because there were no business processes around that particular time. There was no asset register, not even values, for us to gauge to what extent are we recovering our depreciation charge, to what extent are we refurbishing. It's only after the infrastructure verification and evaluation was done that we tried to relate that pricing strategy to what our mandate was within that particular entity, within the administration of the department. Now, when we came up to the fore, when it came out clearly that the pricing strategy would not enable us to sustain the business in its present form after knowing what the asset base was, we immediately presented a bid to National Treasury and say we have a serious problem. Given that now we know what we need to manage going forward, we have a serious problem. And we are not going to hide, and I do not expect any South African to hide that we don't have a problem if we are not going to act on the information we already have. Now we have it. Now, that is the time we realize irrigation, for example, we have a cutting provision, irrigation sector. Now, within the macroeconomic setting, the National Treasury didn't even understand that this is part of the subsidy that they are giving to the general public, to the irrigation sector, which need to be linked up to the macroeconomic setting to say, if we are subsidizing this sector because they are not paying certain charges, what does it mean in quantifying? So it's the first time we are trying to quantify the revenue we are losing as a result of those capping provisions. Before then, we didn't have any information whatsoever. Now, having known what the limitations are, which I don't want to go into the very detail, that one requires a whole day. In fact, I've spent with the water users, I've spent a whole day on the 15th of September explaining to them, when we were discussing these studies and the need for us to revise the pricing strategy, I've already had that meeting. Now, I've shared with them the action plan going forward. This cannot be a matter of the department or National Treasury imposing on the people. We are setting up a working group that will consult on this matter with the view of having a draft for tabling before cabinet before October.
Sorry to disturb you, we are certainly going to have a problem all ourselves. Yeah, in terms of time. Whilst we still need you to go on in your explanation, in your response, so to speak, I think the dilemma that we find ourselves is very soon we will be expected to be going somewhere else. People are going to have meetings, if I'm not mistaken. It's going to be 12 o'clock very soon, and lunch, and there's meetings elsewhere. What I wanted to propose, members, is that we have another session wherein we really want to have time to ourselves. These are very important areas. They also have so much to do with the country where we're going and the safety and security on a whole range of issues. Rather than having to have a written reply, I would propose that we have another session of this nature jointly, wherein we engage. I can imagine when other members or other officials are going to be coming, they will certainly be expected to dwell at length and in detail on the issues. I'm proposing, therefore, that together with the committee section, we reconvene like we are doing jointly. And as a result of that, we therefore adjourn the session. That's my proposal. Are we fine with that?
Okay. Can we, I'm very keen to hear the date that Mr. Ayaya was just about to say for that task team presentation. I didn't understand if it was Cabinet or Parliament. but there's a date that he was just about to say when it would be presented.
Our draft date we are working on is July next year, and it's an ambitious date, so to speak, because there are a number of work that need to go, but that's the target we have given ourselves. But July next year, we should be having at least a draft document that we can share with the cabinet to see whether they agree with our findings and the path we want to work on. Right now, between now and then, is a question of consultative process, and which I'll agree with you, Chair, perhaps also the engagement you're talking about convening will form part of our engagement on this subject rather than giving a 5-minute response on an extremely complex matter, as far as I'm concerned. It has taken me 3 years even to understand that pricing strategy, personally. Now, there are public finance issues, there are other things which I wouldn't even, and which I don't want to even trust you, and therefore I'm inclined to take your position, but those are the dates that we are working on.
What I propose we do, even before we go on recess in November, we have that session, and I'll be fine with that. Okay, members, I think we, at this stage, therefore, shall request that we suspend our engagements on these matters until we come back together. And thank you very much for your time and also the work done in terms of putting together all the presentations. They are appreciated. We are doing our job. That's the only thing that we're doing when we engage with you. We have also been told by President Zuma that we should be robust. President of this country, President of Mr. Slavmo, President Zuma, President of Dr. Bosma, and President of Mrs. Ndude. Your President has instructed us to be robust, Mrs. Ndude. Thank you very much. Until we reschedule, you will be notified accordingly with regards to when we're going to be meeting again. Thanks.